when it was decided that Shoghi Effendi should go to Oxford University in England to polish his translating ability, he welcomed it. Abdu'l-Bahá, though advanced in age, was so active that everyone thought the end was in the distant future. He himself knew the approach of the hour, but his allusions to this effect fell on relatively deaf ears. Life without Abdu'l-Bahá was unthinkable. It had been a little more than 1 year since Shoghi Effendi, now almost 25 years old, had entered Oxford when, on November 28, 1921, Abdu'l-Bahá, after a short illness, passed away. A while before his passing, he had requested the parents of Shoghi Effendi to wire him to return immediately. But the parents chose to send the message by mail instead of telegram so as to not to worry their son. Well, with the slow postal service, the letter arrived much too late. With Abdu'l-Bahá gone, and no one at the helm for 40 days, it appeared to the believers that the Ark of the Covenant had again entered the choppy waters of instability and treachery. The greatest concern was the archbreaker Muhammad Ali, 69 years old, who, according to the will of Baha'u'llah, was the next in line as the successor. Heaven forbid even the thought of such a perfidious man, who had opposed Abdu'l-Bahá so viciously for 3 decades, now taking his place. Well, another transition and time for test and cleansing the faith from the insincere and egotistical. Invariably, every time it was the insincere people in the family and some of the high-ranking teachers who had to be cast out.
The following update will help you to understand the coming events. Abdu'l-Bahá was survived by the following. His 2 years younger sister, the greatest holy leaf. His wife, Monire Khanom. 4 daughters, all married, and their families, including 14 grandchildren. The eldest grandson was Shoghi Effendi, born in 1897. Shoghi means one who longs or yearns. This name was given to him by Abdu'l-Bahá, who also instructed everyone, even his parents, to call him Shoghi Effendi, Effendi being a respectful title, even during his childhood. The last name of Rabbani was also conferred by Abdu'l-Bahá, therefore his full name is Shoghi Effendi Rabbani. His mother was the eldest daughter of Abdu'l-Bahá, and his father was an Afnan, meaning a descendant of the family of the Bab's wife. Shoghi Effendi had 2 brothers and 2 sisters. The covenant breakers were mostly of the older generation. Muhammad Ali, his younger brother Badi'ullah, and the notorious Majduddin, their cousin. Muhammad Ali's son, Shoghi, had been doing mischief in the United States since Abdu'l-Bahá's trip. There were other covenant breakers too, which shall not be mentioned by name. 2 prominent Persian believers who became covenant breakers after the passing of Abdu'l-Bahá were Ahmad Sohrab and Avare. Ahmad Sohrab, as a young man, was sent to the United States to be a servant to Mirza Abul Fazl during his stay in the United States. However, Ahmad Sohrab stayed in the United States and became proficient in English. In 1912, during Abdu'l-Bahá's tour of the United States, Sohrab became Abdu'l-Bahá's interpreter. Abdu'l-Bahá took him back to Haifa to serve as secretary for his English communication to the West. In view of that position, he became well known to the Western believers and grew in prominence. Avare's name was Abdul Hossein, from Taft, a village close to Yazd. Abdu'l-Bahá gave him the title of Avare, meaning wanderer, on account of his extensive travel teaching. He was recognized as one of the best and most popular and respected Baha'i teachers. Not a good ending awaited them. With this brief introduction, we open the next chapter. When Shoghi Effendi heard the shocking news of Abdu'l-Bahá's passing, he collapsed. It took a couple weeks before he could sail back to Haifa on December 16, 1921. He arrived in Haifa on December 29th. He knew that there was a sealed envelope with his name on it, entrusted to the greatest holy leaf by Abdu'l-Bahá. As he has stated himself, he had no idea about becoming the guardian. He thought that after Abdu'l-Bahá, the House of Justice would be formed, and he might be the convener. After his arrival in Haifa, the will and testament was read to him, which was another shock about the gravity of the task. How could anyone replace Abdu'l-Bahá? It was about 40 anxiety-ridden days from Abdu'l-Bahá's passing to January 3, 1922, when the will was read to the family and the believers. It was written in Abdu'l-Bahá's own handwriting, clearly appointing Shoghi Effendi as the guardian of the cause and the authorized interpreter. The Baha'i world was informed, and photocopies of the will were distributed. The believers all over hailed the joyous news. No one questioned the authenticity of the will, except an American woman, Mrs. Ruth White. She had seen Abdu'l-Bahá in the Holy Land, and after his ascension questioned the will to the degree that she asked the postmaster of the United States to prohibit the National Spiritual Assembly from using the United States postal system, since, according to her, they were distributing lies about Shoghi Effendi being the successor to Abdu'l-Bahá. She also wrote her objections to the British High Commissioner of Palestine, but she was ignored by both.
Successive poundings began to assault the Ark of the Covenant, trying to split it, but were incapable of breaking the unity. Due to two nerve-shattering shocks, Shoghi Effendi's health deteriorated. So, in April 1922, he left Haifa for treatment in Europe. Recovered, he returned to Haifa in December of the same year. None of us can realize what it meant to be at the helm in those turbulent years. The life of Shoghi Effendi is a talk all by itself, presently being prepared. You must also study his biographies. Words cannot portray the impact of those terrible attacks. Soon after the ascension of Abdu'l-Bahá, the old creatures of the dark crept out of their dens. Their delusion was that with the mighty guard Abdu'l-Bahá out of the picture, the shield was down and Shoghi Effendi, only 25 years old, was inexperienced and would be vulnerable to their deadly assault. How oblivious of the impregnable armor of the covenant and its source of strength. Muhammad Ali and his associates tried to enforce his claim to be the successor after Abdu'l-Bahá through both government and religious authorities. Frustrated by the lack of progress in their aims, his brother Badi'ullah by force took the key of the shrine of Baha'u'llah from its Baha'i caretaker. In a short time, authorities intervened and the key was returned to Shoghi Effendi. Most of the family, the prominent Baha'is of the West and the East, as well as the government officials, favored formation of the House of Justice, because it appeared that the affairs of the cause were too much for young Shoghi Effendi to handle. Before leaving the Holy Land in April 1922, Shoghi Effendi invited some prominent believers to Haifa to discuss the issue of the Universal House of Justice. Amazing how everyone favored it, particularly those with ego who were sure of their membership in it. Ahmad Sohrab was one of them. Awore arrived too late for the meeting, but he intimated to the greatest holy leaf the urgent need for such a formation. In allusion, he threatened that should Shoghi Effendi fail to comply, he could make the Persian believers rise against him. What a folly! The guidance of Baha'u'llah promised through his unfailing covenant led Shoghi Effendi to decide against the formation of the Universal House of Justice at that time. He found that the foundation was not strong enough to support it. There were loosely knit local assemblies whose members had no idea what the real purpose or the scope of their duties were. National spiritual assemblies did not exist. Abdul Baha's will established them as the secondary houses of justice essential for the election of the Universal House of Justice. Through dedicated guidance and supervision of Shoghi Effendi, the pattern of the institutions of the faith were first built in the United States. Horace Holly was the right hand of the guardian and later was elevated to the rank of a hand of the cause. Now you know why the Guardian referred to the United States as the cradle of the administrative order.
The achievements and dedicated work of Shoghi Effendi in that hostile environment in the Holy Land are too numerous to be mentioned here. However, it is important to mention that the Guardian did not interject his personal ideas into the building of the administration. All were interpretations of the words of Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha, which he was empowered to do. The best example of it was his not pronouncing anything new as a condition for his choice to appoint a successor. Such a new pronouncement or legislation would be only in the domain of the Universal House of Justice. His was only to interpret what had been revealed explicitly or implicitly. As the expounder of the faith, he enabled the believers for centuries to come to understand what is the station of Baha'u'llah and the goal of his cause. Before long, Ahmad Sohrab and Awore and their underlings, with their hopes for leadership dashed, began their rebellion and were cast out as covenant breakers. Awore's wife left him in obedience to the law to shun the covenant breakers. Unfortunately, the close family of Shoghi Effendi did not understand this principle. After the passing of Abdul Baha's sister, the greatest holy leaf, in 1932, one by one, family members, including the aunts and their families, as well as his brothers and sisters, were expelled as covenant breakers. This did not include his parents. Alone, he guided the ark into safe waters. After his marriage in 1937 to Mary Maxwell, known as Amatol Baha Ruhia Khanom, he benefited from her companionship and assistance. If it were not the activities of the covenant breakers, it was the Jewish-Arab War, which terrorized the Holy Land, and equally bad was World War II. Fortunately, many of the covenant breakers took the side of the Arabs during the Jewish-Arab War and left Israel. Regaining the mansion of Badji and the shrine of Baha'u'llah from the hands of the covenant breakers, the beauty of the Baha'i gardens, the majesty of the shrine of the Bab, and the International Archives building, and rapid growth of the faith, gave assurance to the Baha'i world for peaceful sailing for years to come, but it was not to be. Again,
Another transition, another storm of tests. The news of the sudden passing of Sholghi Effendi at age 60 in November 1957 sent a tremor throughout the Baha'i world. The aftershock was yet to come. He passed away in London and was laid to rest there.
A short digression here is necessary. Baha'u'llah appointed four hands of the cause, whose services extended during the ministry of Abdu'l-Bahá. Abdu'l-Bahá did not appoint any and only conferred the rank upon a few posthumously. His will and testament authorized the guardian to appoint the hands of the cause during his ministry for the purpose of protection and propagation of the cause. Sholghi Effendi, during 36 years of his ministry, appointed 31 hands, of whom 27 were living at his passing. Most of the hands were appointed during the last years of his ministry. 1 month before his passing, in his letter written in October 1957, he referred to the 27 hands of the cause as the chief stewards of Baha'u'llah's embryonic world commonwealth. On the invitation of Amatul Baha Ruhiye Khanum, herself a hand of the cause, the hands of the cause gathered in Haifa and examined Sholghi Effendi's desk and papers and found no will and no appointed successor. This news was the aftershock which again shook the Baha'i world within a short span of time. Leaving no will caused some concern, but the believers had matured and no serious disruption took place. The hands of the cause realized what their appointment as the chief steward in the last letter from Sholghi Effendi meant. It became clear that they were to take charge and navigate the ark through some dangerous and narrow passes. This was again critical because they were not infallible as Sholghi Effendi was or the Universal House of Justice would be, but they had the protection of the covenant. In 1953, when Sholghi Effendi had launched the 10-year World Crusade, there were only 12 national spiritual assemblies. In 1963, 6 years after his passing, when the crusade was completed, there were 56 national assemblies. We can easily see how, with the final plan of the Guardian, the foundation became strong enough to support the Universal House of Justice. You might question why the guardian of the faith did not follow the injunction of the Kitab-e-Aqdas to write a will. The purpose of a will by a Baha'i is first, declaration of his belief in Baha'u'llah, and second, disbursement of assets. Sholghi Effendi in his writings clearly demonstrated his belief in Baha'u'llah. He did not have any assets since all of the buildings and holy places were registered under the name of various national spiritual assemblies. Lastly, the conditions dictated by Abdu'l-Bahá in his will could not be met for the appointment of a successor. As was said earlier, he was not authorized to legislate a variation. The condition was that the successor must be Sholghi Effendi's son or an Aqsan, meaning one of the male descendants of Baha'u'llah. Well, he had no child, and all of the Aqsan had been declared covenant breakers, which disqualified them. The hand of the cause as the chief steward had the protection of the covenant and the assurance that Baha'u'llah in the Kitab-e-Aqdas had made a reference to such a possible break in successorship before the election of the Universal House of Justice. So they went to work and elected 9 of the hands to stay in Haifa, fully in charge of their duties to protect the cause and propagate it. For propagation, they oversaw the orderly and systematic progress of the remaining 5 years of the 10-year crusade. As for the protection of the faith, an unusual challenge confronted them. That was in 1960, when Mason Rimi, another hand of the cause, claimed to be the second guardian of the faith. He tried to bypass or manipulate the provisions of Abdu'l-Bahá's will. First, he claimed to be a branch or ghosn. A ghosn, which is the Arabic word for branch, specifically referred to male offspring of Baha'u'llah in their wills. Rimi said he was a branch because Baha'u'llah had said, "You're all the fruit of one branch," and that meant every person is a branch. However, this kind of branch mentioned by Baha'u'llah in Persian is called Shakhsar. Entirely different than ghost, but both are translated into English as branch. The real delusion which led Mason Rimi to make such a preposterous claim was his being appointed by the Guardian as the president of the International Baha'i Council. The Guardian had referred to this council as the embryonic form of the Universal House of Justice. Mason Rimi deducted that this presidency equated with the presidency of the real House of Justice, which according to the will of Abdu'l-Bahá belongs to the Guardian. He was counseled by the other hands that if his deduction was right, then the Guardian himself during his lifetime should have presided over the council. And secondly, the House of Justice would be formed by election, but the council was by appointment. The last decisive rebuff was that the will of Abdu'l-Bahá specifically mentions that the successor appointee by the Guardian must have the approval of the 9 hands of the cause elected by all of the hands. Since he could not be counseled to give up his false claim, he had to be declared as a covenant breaker. That crisis, as severe as it appeared to be, was another test and another indicator about an assailability of the covenant. The ripples he caused made a few ambitious and insincere to sink with him. Some of his misguided followers and contending successors still exist, but soon they will wither and disappear. It is noteworthy that all of the covenant breakers who contested the authorized successors gradually sank deeper into the folly of their betrayal. They ultimately repudiated acceptance of the station of Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Bahá.
Baha'is must shun the covenant breakers and not read their literature. Should one accidentally open their communication, it must be forwarded to the National Spiritual Assembly. The covenant breakers and their writings are contaminated with the spirit of rebellion and are as contagious as a virus. Abdu'l-Bahá has stated that the contact of 1,000 healthy people with a sick person will not cure him, but one diseased person can contaminate 1,000 healthy ones. Baha'u'llah has forbidden association with the violators of the covenant, which also has been reaffirmed by Abdu'l-Bahá in his will and testament. Quote, "One of the greatest and most fundamental principles of the cause of God is to shun and avoid entirely the covenant breakers, for they will utterly destroy the cause of God exterminate his law, and render of no account all efforts exerted in the past. End quote. Before we go to part four, the following two questions should be answered. By reading certain writings of the faith, it appears that the institution of the guardianship should continue. To answer this question, one must define the unique domain of the guardianship versus the domain of the universal house of justice. The principal domain of the guardian is authorized interpretation of the holy words, while the domain of the universal house of justice is legislation of new laws as authorized by Baha'u'llah. When we look at the history of the faith with the ministry of Abdu'l-Bahá for 29 years, from 1892 to 1921, and the ministry of Shoghi Effendi for 36 years, from 1921 to 1957, this faith has more than 65 years of authorized interpretation of the holy words. As you know, Baha'u'llah himself allowed the believers to ask him questions, and he clarified many issues, such as found in the question and answer part of the Kitab-e-Aqdas. The extensive 36 years of interpretation by the guardian has left for posterity a rich mine which the Universal House of Justice will continue to research. This is the meaning of the continuation of the institution of the guardianship. What about the writing that states the guardian is the permanent president of the Universal House of Justice? Doesn't it imply that other than the guardian, no chairman or president should head the house? Could it be considered a protective measure which will not give any individual believer the special position of occupying that seat? You should know that the Universal House of Justice, contrary to all other kinds of organizations, does not have an elected chairman. In rotation, members convene the meetings and sign the communications issued by the Supreme Body. Most likely you have seen communications from the House of Justice. The signature is not an individual's name, but is signed, the Universal House of Justice. The perfection of this system is astonishing.
Part 4, The Making of a Covenant Breaker, Its Perils, and Perpetual Damnation. There are four major categories of covenant breakers. 1. Those who were related to Baha'u'llah Abdu'l-Bahá and Shoghi Effendi. 2. Those who achieved prominence. 3. Those who blindly fell victims to the above by maintaining contact. 4. Those who oppose and try to undermine the authorized leadership of the faith. Closeness to Baha'u'llah Abdu'l-Bahá and Shoghi Effendi proved very dangerous and at times spiritually fatal for those not spiritually oriented. The fruit of spiritual blindness is pride, ambition, and lust for power. Such were the characteristics of the family members who became covenant breakers. They were oblivious to the true station of Baha'u'llah, Abdul Baha, and Shoghi Effendi. All they could see in the appointed successor was their physical similarities as family members, and could not fathom that the destiny of mankind was dependent upon the provisions of the covenant. How narrow-minded and how selfish. Instead of wholehearted support, they caused sorrow and temporary delay in the progress of the faith. About those who achieve prominence in the faith, one can easily see how the attention and admiration of the believers made them feel they should have a special rank. The example of the exemplar Abdul Baha, that the highest rank for a believer is that of humility and servitude, meant nothing to them or the family members. By feeling equal to each appointed successor, they wished to become partners with them or displace them, and as a result, they were cast out. They devised all sorts of schemes to mislead the gullible believers. Anything from dissemination of letters discrediting Abdul Baha, Shoghi Effendi, the Hands of the Cause, and the Universal House of Justice. Every time, it was a great test for the believers. Fortunately, they did not make a dent, and the faith remained undivided. Abdul Baha states, quote, "Were it not for the protecting power of the covenant to guard the impregnable fort of the cause of God, there would arise among the Baha'is in one day 1,000 different sects." Cutting off contact or shunning the covenant breakers and not reading their literature may sound like being against the principle of independent investigation of truth. Consideration of two facts will help us to understand the reason for shunning. Number one, most of us have done our investigation before becoming believers, which should include knowing the history of and understanding the spiritual death in covenant breaking. Being a sincere believer includes accepting the authority and being obedient to the commandments of Baha'u'llah, Abdul Baha, Shoghi Effendi, and the Universal House of Justice. Number two, the covenant breakers are not just ignorant enemies of the faith. The majority have been learned Baha'is who could not satisfy their hunger for leadership. With their beguiling talk, they can confuse a believer who is not so learned. At the beginning, they appear sincere. As soon as one's confidence is gained, they implant the seeds of doubt, which are based on falsehoods about the chain of succession and authority in the faith. Therefore, investigating their claims should not be confused with investigation of truth. Just one example of the devious activities of the covenant breakers in Akka after the passing of Baha'u'llah will suffice. To discredit Abdul Baha, the covenant breakers would send a couple of their double-faced agents to befriend the believers, most of whom had actually been at the presence of Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha. These agents would act as sincere Baha'is and very devoted to Abdul Baha. In the course of their visits, they gradually would elevate Abdul Baha's rank to that of Baha'u'llah and even greater, falsifying that Abdul Baha had claimed this. At this stage, a third agent entering the picture would adamantly dispute such preposterous claims. Well, you guessed the result. The seed of doubt and confusion planted, and another victim recruited to their camp. This brings up an important point, and that is we have to understand that we may not call believers who do not agree with us or who are disobeying some laws covenant breakers. Pronouncing a person a covenant breaker was done by Baha'u'llah, Abdu'l-Bahá, and Shoghi Effendi. In the present day, it is done by the hands of the cause in consultation with the Universal House of Justice. It is a very serious pronouncement and may not be done lightly by an individual. The extent of loving counseling extended to these people, beginning with Mirza Yahya, to the average person in this day, is beyond the patience of an ordinary person. In case one observes that another believer is maintaining contact with the covenant breaker or engaging in attacking the faith, one should discuss his or her concerns with the board member for protection or their assistance. Gossiping about such concerns must absolutely be avoided.
In regard to the retribution awaiting the soul of a covenant breaker, this, one of many admonishments from Baha'u'llah, will leave no doubt. Quote, "He who breaks the covenant is cursed by heaven and earth," end quote. To understand why the sin of covenant breaking has been cursed by Baha'u'llah, the following explanation might help. A child never physically challenges an adult. To challenge and oppose, one must feel equal or superior to the opponent. This was the attitude of Mirza Yahya, who challenged Baha'u'llah, Muhammad Ali, who challenged Abdu'l-Bahá, and their like then or later on. Assuming such equality or partnership is a transgression well beyond any other sin. The enemies of the faith who through ignorance have attacked the faith might be forgiven by God, but those who were believers and knowingly violate the covenant and strike at its roots are entirely different. Sincere repentance could bring absolution. Baha'u'llah offered it to Mirza Yahya in the Kitab-i Aqdas, but he did not repent. Abdu'l-Bahá, Shoghi Effendi, and the Universal House of Justice have forgiven those deserving it, but the majority have gone to the grave with that eternal burden. Now a few words about the attitude of the believers towards covenant breakers. Baha'is must shun the covenant breakers, ignore their literature, but never challenge or persecute them. Just by leaving them to themselves, like a cut-off branch, they spontaneously will wither and die. However, the community must be protected from the covenant breakers, as the body from a deadly disease. Such protection must not be confused with acts of opposition and hatred. Before closing this presentation, one final thought. Why do we need to pray for firmness in the covenant? Remember, the covenant is a contract between Baha'u'llah and us. We are the second party to this covenant and believe in the authorized successors to Baha'u'llah. The prayer is for our protection, to never, even for one moment, doubt the infallibility of Baha'u'llah and his appointed successors. Such doubting does not necessarily need the interference of a covenant breaker. Our human weakness might be our worst enemy. May this prayer from Abdu'l-Bahá protect us all. O my Lord and my hope, help thou thy loved ones to be steadfast in thy mighty covenant, to remain faithful to thy manifest cause, and to carry out the commandments thou didst set down for them in thy book of splendors, that they may become banners of guidance and lamps of the company above, wellsprings of thine infinite wisdom and stars that lead aright as they shine down from the supernal sky. Verily art thou the invincible, the almighty, the all-powerful.